Hello everyone, welcome to episode 37 of our podcast, Tech Casteros, with our guest today, Aaron Arvizu, founder of Three Sigma Consulting, an IT business consulting firm. And also he's a cybersecurity consultant and is a secretary of what's it called? Consejo de Ciberseguridad.
Es Consejo de Seguridad Informática y Ciberseguridad Nacional.
Yes. So it's a Council of Cybersecurity here in Mexico, which is a very important council and gaining more importance as time goes by. Welcome, Aaron. Nice to have you here.
Well, thank you, Alfonso. Pretty glad to be part of this podcast and also glad to talk a little bit more about this subject, which is really important right now for the community, not only for businesses. It's something that everybody should know and be aware of.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and it's a worldwide thing, right? Not just it doesn't happen just in just one country or two countries. It happens all over the world, these types of incidents, cybersecurity incidents.
Right.
And I'm glad that there's people out there like you that actually, care about these things and want to help other companies make sure that they have, the best possible protection that they can have. So tell me a little bit more about yourself, your background a little bit. I know that you have a master's degree, correct?
Not a master's.
Oh, sorry.
I've never been that far, but
Yeah.
a couple more certifications and all that techie stuff that we like.
Yeah, you went to the MIS. Did you study the MIS, correct?
I studied MIS at the
Yeah.
University of Arizona, so.
Management Information Systems. Yeah, I got confused with Master's, sorry. Yeah, Management Information Systems at the University of Arizona. How was that like for you?
Oh, it was pretty fun. Life at the university, it's mostly fun and not too much studying, but I was happy to have pretty good classmates. I think I had pretty good teachers too, that I think I grasped a lot of good stuff from them. But you know what? I think most of the good experience and good stuff from back in those days was from my experience at work.
Yeah.
I was pretty lucky to have jobs IT related. So combining that with what I was studying was a pretty good mix of lectures, you know.
Yeah. Real world experience is always the best teacher.
Right.
Tell me, cybersecurity or cyber threats. So we sort of know, like, people that are outside. I have a cybersecurity certificate as well, so I'm not as unfamiliar with the topic. But for everyone, for most people out there, can you tell us about what are the most common types of cyber threats that exist?
Sure. Well, business wise, I think the most common cyber threat is information ransom, which is caused by something that we know most people in this area called ransomware,
Yeah.
where they actually where someone or something goes into your system, servers, whatever it's called that you have information inside, and they encrypt though that information, so it's not usable by the
Yeah.
system, by the person. And the perpetrator or the hacker, they ask for a ransom to give you the key to unencrypt the information so you can use it again.
Right.
And sadly, I think that 8 out of 10 of those threats, they start by a user error.
Right.
So most of this stuff, it starts by the human and it ends up affecting some way or somehow to the company or to the business.
Yeah. Yeah, it's human engineering, right? I think there's a term for it, human engineering,
Social engineering.
social
Exactly.
engineering.
And it's funny because most people think that hackers are behind the computer writing code and studying the company systems and all that. But funny that right now they're looking for more vulnerabilities on the user side in order to start than start from the other side. It's like a reverse engineering than the other way. Like back in 20 years ago, I think it was more the other side that the hackers started these infections. Right now, they're most targeting the user because that's they've seen that statistically that's the easiest way to get into a system.
It's there's a large vulnerability there with people. If they're not trained on how to handle certain situations, or if they get a phone call asking for a PIN number or a special code and people just giving them out, that's a big problem. And I think that's something that you do as well, right? You participate in user training, like train
Yeah,
people
we have a security awareness training for businesses, and it's focused and targeted specifically for users on how to be more tech savvy on the best ways or best practices on using the internet, the email, the files, trying to identify when something is not correctly used. That way they can stop and ask instead of click and before they think.
That's the phishing, right? That's the phishing attack.
It's called phish, right? And it's called from, and the phishing word comes from the word fish, which is kind of, I don't know how to say in English, but it's when,
Fish. Yeah,
right, when something is, it appears to be something, but it's not, you know.
right. Yeah, so if you get an email from supposedly the bank saying, "Oh, your account has been is in trouble. Please click on this link to get your information back," or whatever, and then you end up downloading something into your computer, right? Which is usually what happens.
It's usually what happens, and 9 out of 10 of these things, they start by email. So email has been one of the best activities or most activities used by the hackers to start some
Yeah,
infiltration.
to propagate. And then I guess that also ties into denial of service attacks. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that works, or what that
The
is?
denial of service attack, it's when, let's say that a hacker infects 1,000 computers. The user never realizes it's hacked because the virus, the only thing that it's doing, it's targeting one system or one site. So once the hacker has like 1,000 computers, they start pinging or contacting the servers from any website or any system on the internet. So that causes that system to get swamped, and the routers, the firewalls, everything that starts or is trying to process all that information just blocks and freezes. So it stops the service, and that's when it's called denial of service attack.
And it's super dangerous if imagine you're a bank, right?
Right,
And
if you're a
nobody can
bank,
access your
actually,
banking portal because
I
of
have a funny story about this. I met a guy once in Phoenix, Arizona, when I was working. We were partners from SonicWall, so we used to go to the monthly meetings of SonicWall that they have the headquarters there in Phoenix. And there was a guy that he managed the security for a porn site. And he said that daily he received a lot of DDoSs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so
Porn sites? Yeah, because porn sites make a lot of money. So
they make a lot of money, and if they're not available, they lose a lot of money.
yeah, they need to be online. Just like
Right.
banks.
Correct.
No, I heard a story about have you heard, I guess you know about like national terrorism or cyber terrorism, where one country, one nation attacks another one? Because I read about a while ago Iranian hackers attacked an American bank through DDoS because of some policy that was going on. It's still going on. There's still some conflict between these countries, but
Yeah,
that's
even
also a way
now
to pay it back.
that there's the Israel-Gaza conflict, the Iranians, I think, they were threatening Israel to do a DDoS attack on their fortress. I can't remember what, how they call that protecting system they have that's so sophisticated.
Oh, really? Okay.
We're threatening to do a DDoS. That way, those equipments won't function or they won't work in case
Oh,
they
you
have.
mean is it Fortress like controlling weapons or what is it?
Yeah,
Ah, okay.
they have. I think they call it the dome.
The dome.
And it's basically drones and fire equipment that protect against missiles and
Yeah.
bombs and things that they prevent from those missiles and bombs to enter the space area from
Yeah,
Israel.
it's amazing, like the power or the danger behind the cyber attack, right?
So
Like,
imagine
well,
if those if that dome is controlled by a system that is connected to the internet or to a network, then it's gonna be hackable. So if it's hackable, then you need to protect it, and it starts all that sequence.
Yeah, I think I read something similar happened between Russia and Ukraine, where Russian hackers attacked a power plant, turning off their control systems, and they
Right.
were out of power for some time. But yeah,
Yeah.
it's
2 years,
very.
I think 2 years ago, there was something similar in the on the east side of the United States with oil and gas pipe. Where this company, I think it was in South or North Carolina, it got attacked by ransomware. So all the south side of the United States or southeast side, they were without gas and electricity for about 4 or 5 days. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
When was that? Was that a couple of years ago?
That was like 2 or 3 years ago, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty serious. I mean, and I think outside of the US, I think there needs to be more consciousness about the importance of cybersecurity, especially here where we are in Mexico. I think
Well,
still people are starting to understand.
there is a lot of consciousness, but as I tell people and business owners, even if you have the most protected system, the best software and tools, there's still gonna be a gap to be a vulnerable by somehow somewhere. That's why my YouTube channel is called the Murphy Law, because
Murphy's Law, yeah.
if anything can happen, it will happen.
Yeah,
It's
if they want to hack you, that's what they tell you too. If they want to hack you, they will. So you have to have a good remediation plan.
right.
Can you tell us a
That's
little bit
really
about
important.
what that is, a
Well,
remediation?
imagine the remediation plan. If you have a car and you depend 100% of that car for work, family matters, transportation, everything, and in your mind you're like, this car, I can lose it at any time. You can have a car accident. Yeah, it can get stolen. It may die on you one day. So you think about remediation, and remediation will be having an extra one
Yeah,
available for you to use.
a backup car.
It's a backup car, right? So in business terms, it will be the same thing. If you have a server or you have a system and your business or all the information and process and workflows depend from that system, then you need to have a plan to remediate in case something happens to that server.
Right, and
So,
it could include also communication, right? Because if you're a company that has, if you're like a big company that you trade stocks, right? You need to communicate to your shareholders. We've been hacked, but we're working on it. So you need to have a communication plan as well in place as part of your remediation plan, right?
Yeah,
And
that documentation or process, it's also included on that remediation plan or on the disaster recovery plan,
Yeah.
where you need to contact the special people or the most important people at the company. You need to have all those details straight up. So when something happens, you just go and follow all those guidelines.
Right. Yeah. Going a little bit back to the human element of cybersecurity, we mentioned at the very beginning, like social engineering is the most effective probably way that you get hacked or even someone getting money from you. What are some good strategies to enhance cybersecurity awareness for individuals and organizations?
There's a couple, but it's even the security awareness program, it's a combination of things. First, you have one or two courses or talks that they teach best practices to the user. You see how to identify weird stuff on emails, how to notice something going on a website. You identify the extensions on the files in case it's not the extension that you're used to. You also identify common like common practices from someone. Let's say you always get PDFs from a customer, and someday that file is not a PDF, it's a doc or a Word document. Then you gotta ask yourself, why am I receiving a document instead of a PDF? So that's one. Then the other part is the phishing campaigns, where we create fake emails. So in order to test the users to see how well they learned from that course, and depending on that results, we create more like training campaigns, questionnaires, most of those things. And at the end, we do another phishing campaign that just to see if everything is working okay. But even this security awareness program is recommended to give to be taken once a year by companies.
And I think once a year is not, probably you need to do it more often, but
Well, I always tell companies or businesses that it depends on the rotation of their personnel. If they have a high rotation, then probably it's going to be once every 3 months or once every 6 months. But if the rotation is not too much, then they can just do a refresher every year to see new stuff, new things that's going on in the market and those things. But it all
And this
depends
is,
on the business.
and I think this is for everyone. It doesn't matter if, even if you're a super software developer, with the latest technology or knowledge, you still need these awareness courses because, there's so many things. And I know there's like communities, right? And organizations. Tell us a little bit about the organizations that are out there that are like contributing to the collective knowledge of cybersecurity professionals, because I know there
Yeah,
are a
sure.
couple out there.
Yeah, there's a couple. The one that I'm part of, it's called Consejo C. And the main focus of this organization, it's to promote the information security subject in universities, businesses, and government. So in universities, we create the cybersecurity chapter. So students can have labs, they can invite speakers, they can have their own kind of club so they can learn more. Sadly, right now there's no cybersecurity bachelor's or some kind of title that the
A
universities have,
program, yeah.
right? Most of these guys end up going into IT or information systems. So that's why we created these chapters to help at least get some knowledge that the university is lacking.
Right. And
With business,
companies here also, I don't think there's many companies that have a CISO, a CISO, right? The Chief Information
oh no.
Security Officer, which
Well,
is now a more common role in other companies and other places.
it's hard to find someone that has a CIO. Now it's going to be harder to find the one that has a CISO
A
or a CISO.
CISO, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a Chief Information Security Officer. But yeah, it's becoming a more common role and has as equal importance as a CIO, right?
Right. Actually, there's a trend in the United States. They're the one that started this trend. They're now separating the information security department from IT. They learned that they cannot be the same people auditing or doing the stuff in order to prevent.
All right, yeah. It's like the QA guy, not the developer
Right.
can't be the QA guy, right? It's the
That's
same
correct.
concept.
Imagine the software developer being the QA and the tester, then everything will work okay,
Yeah, there's a judgment. Of course. So that's good that you do those trainings. It's very important that there's awareness and there's a lot of also tutorials online and stuff. If, for example, if I was like a small company that's growing really fast, right? All of a sudden I have all this work, right? And I have no idea about cybersecurity protection, right? Or tools. What are the core elements that I should consider having so that I can start building a robust or start having robust cybersecurity
Right. So
my company.
imagine, let's put it this way with an example with Alio. Imagine you go back a couple of years, you started the company and you have two more software developers. So what do you guys use to work or your information operation? It's gonna be a cloud or some kind of cloud where you start developing or you to develop computers, documents, email, and what else am I missing?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
Let's just take
email,
those four things.
your code base, your code repositories, your emails.
Right. So imagine you have those four things. So first you need to have a good email system. Good email system, it's an email server or an email system that provide you with a good anti-spam, good antivirus, which is when you get an email, you can scan it and see if something is weird. But also the best part or the most recommended part is to have a double the second factor authentication, which is the system that will let you identify yourself with a second device. That way, if someone knows your password, they still need your token or your code. So having those three elements will have you at least a security that someone will not access your email. Then your documents and files, where are you gonna be located? If it's gonna be living on the same site that your email system will, which in this case, good companies will be Microsoft 365 or Google Workspace.
Oh, yes.
If that's the case, then there's security included, where you can put permissions on what users will be accessing and which information will be not be able to ask. Plus, in order to access that information, you already have the multi-factor authentication. But let's say if you don't have that server, then you need to figure out how to protect the access from that information on those computers, but also start thinking of a backup. Because if you're relying on someone carrying that information in a laptop and that laptop gets stolen, first you need to get that information out and running, and then you need to guarantee that that information will not be used for something else. Okay. Then the cloud system. You need a cloud system that will first offer you a multi-factor authentication in order to identify where you at, and the availability part, that if that site goes down, you still can choose some other part of the world to continue working.
Yeah, so for documentation, you have
And
redundancy, right?
right, and the last thing will be the what is called an antivirus or the software for device protection. Right now they're trying to stop calling it an antivirus because it's like a word, but something to protect your computer from getting an infection.
What are they calling it now? Is it endpoint protection or what is
It's
it?
endpoint protection, right?
Tell us about the evolution of the antiviruses, because AI is now very popular. Are companies like Palo Alto Networks or other, Sonic, you mentioned SonicWall or I don't know, Fortinet. How are they using AI or how are they thinking about using AI to enhance their capabilities?
Well, right now, endpoint protection has been it's had an evolution. That's why it's not called antivirus anymore, because it's doing more than antivirus. Before the antivirus, if you remember, it was always updating the database or the list. And the way it worked, let's say you get a file and there's a suspicion of that file, then it matches it with that database. And if it matches, it stops. But if it doesn't match, then it's gonna let it run. That's why it's called an antivirus, and that's how it's used to work. Then the EDR or the endpoint detection response systems came in, which is a little more advanced. What I did, it was thinking more on how the activity of that file was going to affect the computer. So let's say if you run, if you open an Excel spreadsheet and that is Excel spreadsheet wants to use your C drive instead of your Office folder, then it's going to stop it. That's why it's called a endpoint device remediation. It automatically does it. It doesn't need to update any list or anything like that. Then the XDR came. The XDR is similar to the EDR, but it's listening to everything that goes around your device. So if something or if another device gets infected and is trying to do something with your system, it's gonna block it or it's gonna stop it. So it's gonna encapsulate that device and take care of it.
Can you give us a little more specific example of a device that would try to corrupt your own computer?
Yeah, sure. Well, before back in the day, there were worms. That's how they called those viruses. The worms started by infecting a computer, doing something, maybe creating pop-ups or trying to sell you something. But they were smart enough to detect more devices in the network and spreading around. Say if you have five people in your business or your company and one user gets that virus, then after that virus activates, it's going to start broadcasting the network and trying to find more computers in order to get into those and infect them. It was called a worm because the worms usually go around trees or they go into the ground and start doing all those holes and moving around. And that's where the worm came out.
When you were talking about when you're talking about providing access to documents, there's something called identity access management, right? And it's super important that I think it's very critical that you have very well identified or have identified very well who should access what. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience doing this with companies, like and how how you communicate this or how you get this defined with companies?
Well, I have a story from a customer that they had a server with files in-house, so it was a physical server. So they have this all this business information, and they had permissions or security permissions to access those files. But one time a nurse came in, and I can't remember how high the IT people or the IT personnel, they didn't put all the permissions to that nurse. So that nurse, when he was ticking around the file structure and servers, he found the employee
He had
folders.
access to everything, basically.
He had access to everything. He found the employee folders. So long story short, he created a couple of virtual accounts or virtual bank accounts. He deployed several payments for those users to different accounts. And he ended up getting a couple thousand bucks from
Oh, that
that
sounds
hack.
like a very sophisticated nurse, man.
So he was not a hacker, but
Hacker nurse.
he was a really curious
I
person
think
that.
he watched a lot of cybersecurity movies, or remember that movie Hackers from the
I'm pretty
90s?
sure he had a lot of free time there. He was able to Google this stuff and watch videos and those.
There's a lot of frameworks out there that frameworks, a framework is basically, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is basically a guideline to follow or best practices to follow to have, a proper cybersecurity policy in your company. What are some of the most important or powerful frameworks that are out there that we can follow?
Well, I would say that the most used and most popular, it's the NIST, NIST. It's broken up in four parts. And sadly, it's only used and applied by cybersecurity, businesses or consultants. Even companies, if they would like to apply it and use it for their businesses, they could go online and find that framework and guidelines and follow them. But it's usually the lack of wanting to do it then that affects the businesses. So
NIST is
that's
popular.
something else that affects us, the culture stuff or the culture-wise part. where businesses or still businesses don't think that someday or somehow they will get affected or they will get hacked. So it's hard sometimes to get into their brain and trying to convince them that this is a real protection thing
Right.
and not to happen instead of being there when something happens.
Yeah, NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I just Googled it, and it's the federal, it's an American US federal agency that works with industry and academia to enhance economic security and improve quality of life. Okay. But yeah, it's one, it's like the main one, but there's other ones. There's ISOs as well, right?
The ISOs are pretty good, but sadly, the ISOs are only or usually applied when you're being regulated or audited, but some thing that you're running on your business, and that's when usually businesses implement those ISOs.
Yeah.
The 27,000 one, that's the one for information security.
Right. Yeah. Cool. So if I was if I wanted to implement best practices, I should probably go by NIST if I had the resources, right?
If you don't need the ISO certification and you just want to follow best practices, the NIST framework will be your best friend to start something. Even if you don't apply all the guidelines and controls, at least you can, if you apply, I would say like 20 or 30% of it, it'll be enough to reduce a great part of the risks that you might find someday.
Yeah. Going back to ransomware. Because I think ransomware has become the most threatening cyber attack right now. You hear about ransomwares like every other week. A big company here in Mexico, Coppel, turns out it was attacked by a ransomware related to VMware. Someone managed to corrupt some ESXi files and, making the hackers able to encrypt virtual machines, which is obviously is a very dangerous, or they take control of your virtual servers, and then they ask for Bitcoin is what they're doing, which Bitcoin right now is $60,000, so
That's like 60 or
and it's
60,000.
increasing in values. I think the halving is coming soon, so Bitcoin might increase in value even more. But ransomware, how do we what are some good strategies to try to not be attacked by ransomware?
Well, it's ransomware usually gets into your network or into your systems proven by two ways. Where you have vulnerabilities open on your network from the outside. Let's say you're propagating a system and you have open ports that can access your network. That's one. And the other by email. Those are the two ways or the two or 98%, let's say, of how ransomware starts. So going back to what we were talking about, the human factor, the human error, it's usually that it starts by tricking you, and then something goes in, and that something that goes in might be a ransomware, and it starts doing their action.
You mentioned the port thing. That's very interesting, because it's so easy to open up ports, right? And if you don't know what you're doing, if you have like a junior IT guy, you give him access to your AWS account or your Azure, and they start opening up ports and setting up VMs, and it's so easy to open up a port, and it's security. So that Amazon and Azure, you can create a virtual machine in 10 minutes, right? Or less. So you can do all these things, but if you don't know, if no one's checking what you're doing, or if you don't know what you're doing, then it's super dangerous, right? So like a double-edged sword.
Super dangerous, and it's easy to scan sites or places that have ports open. And the most dangerous thing is that there's free websites where they propagate it with public IPs with open ports.
Yeah, you definitely need to know what you're doing, and thus the importance of being
And to
prepared.
your question, ransomware has become really popular because it's been the best virus that will guarantee you a return on the investment.
Of course.
Because before, they used to attack businesses and companies, but somehow, somewhere, the IT guys were able to remediate the virus. But when someone encrypts your information, there's no way to unencrypt it and you cannot operate and you need to continue making money, then your only escape or your only chance to going back to business is pain. So that's why it's become really, really popular. It's been on the market for about 12 or 13 years already.
I want to ask you one last question before we go. This has been a very good conversation. I think we should have another one. But
Sure.
what future trends do you see are coming in cybersecurity world?
Well, we are really afraid and trying to expect the best from AI. AI is going to be a really powerful tool to work to for businesses, but sadly, it's going to be a really good tool for those hackers or those cyber criminals, because it's going to let them operate on a more automatically fashion way than it's being used right now. So most likely, so far right now, they're ahead of our game. So the cyber criminals, usually they're ahead of the game of the ones that are trying to protect. So if they start using or if they continue using, because they already started using it, but if they develop more stuff using AI, it's gonna cause a lot of problems. And also AI is gonna have to make businesses think more about security, because those automatic tools will also be vulnerable. And they will need to think for ways to protect those actions, that those machines or softwares or something that it's doing that AI will work.
So we need to be better prepared, basically.
Right.
Well, that was my last question, Aaron. Thank you very much for your time and accepting my invitation. I know you have your own YouTube channel, and I've seen some of your posts. Pretty good to follow.
Oh,
So,
thanks, dude.
Can you remind us what the name of the channel is?
Yeah, the name of the channel is La Ley de Murphy,
I think
and it's Spanish for Murphy's Law. And usually the main focus of that channel is to talk about news or cybersecurity news weekly. We had a couple of interviews, and we had like a special part of that channel doing it for backups. But the most recurrent or the most common things to see there is the weekly cybersecurity news.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll make sure I put that on the notes. And
Thanks.
again, thank you very much, Aaron. It's a pleasure to have you, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, anytime, Alfonso, and thanks again for the invitation. More than glad to talk about this and tell more people about this and so they can learn that there's a risk and to be prepared.
Very cool. Thanks, man. Have a
Well,
good
thanks,
one.
Alfonso.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.